Okay, so anyway, my name is Priyavrata Das, and in case you know, you wonder who I am and why you should look at this and listen to me well. I think in that case it's more because of the topic than because of the speaker, but as I said, I would be happy if what I'm doing here can become part of a discussion where those who are smarter and more knowledgeable than me can lift this to higher levels. But I feel a responsibility. If there's anything I can do, then I should. So that's why I'm sitting here talking this. So anyway, in my previous episode here, we went back to the starting point, at least for me. As I said, I joined in the beginning of March 1978, basically during the GBC meetings where the successor gurus were to be chosen, or basically the policy around that succession where it was discussed, because the disciples of Srila Prabhupada were a bit confused by then. So, and I'm starting here because I think that as we look at it a little bit closer, you at least try it from this perspective I'm trying, and which I really think is the one that Prabhupada gave, although not many have understood it, then things will get clear, much clearer at least. So there we were. I just stepped into the temple. Basically, didn't even know what a guru is. And in fact, I stayed there in the temple during that period between Prabhupada leaving and the new gurus getting active. So I may have seen an interesting but short episode in the history of ISKCON, actually. During a couple of months or so, because, you know, I joined, and several with me during that time. seeking spiritual guidance and having the only having the conception of Prabhupada being our guru. We heard after a while that Prabhupada must have a successor or successors. Rumors were there will be several, but that's what we knew. So, we read Prabhupada's books, and there were older devotees giving lectures, which we listened carefully to because they knew much more than we did. Some of them had been around for 3, 4, 7, sometimes even 10 years. And we had respect for those devotees. I would say due respect, because we didn't see them as divine really, but as you know, more advanced devotees. And that's how things were, and frankly speaking, I don't think we really at least had some screaming desperate need of more than that as far as our spiritual life. Went at that time at least. Then the temple president came back and announced that now there is this, your gurus are confirmed, and our guru will be Harikesh Swami. I had no idea who he was. Some of the older bhaktas had met him. I didn't know how he looked like. Well, anyway. So after a month, couple of months, he came and initiated a few of us. Because by then we of course knew that initiation is important. For spiritual success. But then, chanting Hare Krishna was all that was needed, right? Well, it was a little confusing, but I think mainly we thought that if you want to be an advanced devotee, then you get initiated, you get these three strands of neck beads and a name and beads that your guru has chanted on and so forth. We were stepped up one level. I think that was basically it. Well, I can continue there. I mean, this guru came and he gave lectures. And then he went. And after half a year, the second batch, I was initiated. And well, I had a guru, and there was some kind of relationship. You could write a letter and get an answer if it was very important. But I mean, to be honest, most of the nitty-gritties of Krishna consciousness I learned from Godbrothers and older devotees. It wasn't really that mysterious. Chant Hare Krishna, read the Prabhupada's books and take prasadam and do service and follow the principles. That will get you pretty far. That's what we learned. Anyway, that's from our side, at least my side of you, as short as I could put it.
And chocolates.
Now, those days when I joined, unbeknownst to me, a great drama was playing out there in Mayapur. It seems. Who shall be guru after Prabhupada? We know by now that the Sonal Acharya thing with the 11 Uttamadhikaris was not realistic. Which was later admitted. Officially, in ISKCON. In the mid or late 80s. But ever since, there seems to be a lingering confusion of some kind regarding Guru Tattva, which you probably think is a boring topic and which I won't get much deeper into here and now. But which is nevertheless, I claim, where the error might have appeared. So let me try to explain. What I mean. We learn, the Prabhupada said it, that Guru should be Uttamadhikari, spotless, infallible devotee. Completely freed from the influence of Maya, Prabhupada, we also know, quite clearly and beyond any doubt, had declared his disciples not to be, none of them, any Uttamadhikari. In fact, he had, during his last time, expressed his doubt in them to his godbrothers and concern whether they should be able to continue his movement after he left. So here, there clearly was a problem, right? Guru Isottamadikari Prabhupada's disciples were at best Madhyamadikari. But mainly being in their most of them in their 20s. They were simply beginners. Who are described in Sanskrit as Kanishtadikaris. There were some learned scholarly people around not so many. A few with managerial experience, but not so many. most were old hippies and their successors, guys like me, people like me. Kids who had for whatever reason dropped out of the system, including education sometimes. With counterculture. Meaning most of us were completely unqualified to run a major international organization. Of course, we could go on about that. And how the way to advance through the hierarchic structure, which was very strong, of the movement was not to be brahminical, learned. Tolerant, merciful, and so on. but more of being a forward. Tough guy. Who sold many books and somehow took a leading position. In the group. Often by simply being a dominant person. We see that, of course, in every group. But anyway, back to the Uttamadhikari. So, still the fact remained, or the question remained, where are the Uttamadhikaris? Now, what was decided in that UBC meeting was, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I wasn't there, of course. A bit of a mixture between, if you can't make it, then fake it, and another interesting way to get around it, that when the disciple is authorized by his guru to become guru, along with that authorization comes an empowerment. that magically transformed that Kanishta or Madhyamadikari into an Uttamadikari. And voila, there you had a bona fide guru. This was of course a neat solution, but the question is, was it true? Does it work that way? Did Prabhupada confirm that in his teachings? Well, I don't think many devotees today would claim so. That you can, in a moment's notice, bypass almost the entire path of the Bhakti Marga by such an appointment. If that was possible, and if Prabhupada by his spiritual potency could turn a neophyte into a perfect liberated soul overnight, and why didn't he just do that for all of us? And if he could, but somehow chose not to, then why so? Since the goal, whole goal and purpose was to get us out of Maya somehow or other. Jag säger jag behöver en sån här, det räcker inte. Ska vi ta kontant eller hur ska jag göra det?
Du kan ta en påse.
Det kan jag, ja. Tack. Moreover, it is by now quite clear that most of those young men sitting up on those Vyasa sons were not Uttama Adhikaris. And if someone listening to this thinks that they were or are, then this is perhaps not really for you. Now, how should that dichotomy, as it seemed, be resolved? And why didn't Prabhupada give more specific instructions? Well, after again reading the instructions he gave in the talks to his disciples in those last days, I would rather say that he did give just the right instructions that he should have given. He did appoint 11 to Ritviks to initiate on his behalf while he was still around. When asked about who should be guru, he said all of his disciples can be guru, but they must become qualified. Now, what did that mean? All of his disciples can become guru, but only when they have become uttamadhikaris. Wasn't that the qualification required? However, Prabhupada also indicates, both in those instructions and throughout his teachings in general, that there are gurus and there are gurus. They are the acharyas, the heads of institutions, major lighthouses. The ones that we read about in the books is the major links holding the disciplic succession together. Then there are the quote-unquote regular gurus. Which we also find there in the Gaudiya tradition and others. I guess more in the basic sense of the word guru as teacher.
Det går inte att spela.
And Prabhupada describes, as far as I can ever understand from studying his teachings, that such a guru can also be a Madhyamadikari. Such a Madhyamadikari guru is, of course, well, take away, of course, is able to guide and bring his disciples, their disciples, to their own level. And even if they are themselves not residents of Vrindavan yet, completely liberated souls with Krishna Prema, I as their disciples go along in progress, they will of course too. I guess you could say it's a bit like students are allowed to teach younger students while still being students. They can also teach. And a nice thing with that is that a good way to learn is by teaching. Now, going back to that fateful meeting in 78, that seems not to have been understood. Or, as others say, some did understand it. Because even I can understand it, then why shouldn't others who are smarter than I am? However, and don't take this from me, but from those who can tell you about what went on behind the or backstage back then in ISKCON back then, some ambitious leaders, the top ones in fact, were actually quite eager to not only become humble teachers to younger devotees, but to become acharyas, rulers of the institution. Indeed, there were examples of a few such disciples, notably three of them, who had mm. shown such ambitions even years before Prabhupada left. And if you look at what happened, again, backstage, behind the Uttama Adhikari characters on the Vyasa Sans, pure devotees on the Vyasa San. A heavy power play was going on between the 11 themselves, the DBC, and between the chosen ones and all their other God brothers. Territory, manpower, and money. The usual old story. As I said, there were voices warning voices and alarming voices and protests among the God brothers and God sisters, and but they were quieted down as envious, as dangerous for the stability of the movement, which was now upheld by those Uttama Adhikaris. That had been authorized by Prabhupada. Only problem is, they weren't within brackets. Well, this is not a writing, or is it? Anyway, now, if we would go back and do it right, how about this? Rather than the guru having to pretend to be a perfect, super, pure devotee, Uttama Adhikari, if they had just remained who they actually are. no need for a fine Sanskrit classification. This is me, you know me, I'm like that. And rather than appointing, because that is not in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, of appointing gurus, doing just what Prabhupada said, allowing student, teacher, guru-disciple relationships to develop naturally. But most importantly, allowing someone serving as a teacher, a guru, to just be how they are, not pushing them into pretending to be someone they are not. Makes sense, doesn't it? And also then not pushing the disciple into the role of some fan or starry-eyed adorer that then has to idealize that other devotee into a perfect person, and rationalize away anything disturbing that image. All that which generally is the recipe for the development of a cult. And that is what happened. ISKCON turned into a cult. And it is in a way not strange that the anti-cult movement started chasing this movement. So, picture this. An ISKCON that remained much the way it was when I joined, in that middle stage. Temples with devotees, devotees living outside the temples, devotees together, continuing to serve the mission of Prabhupada, continuing to make and distribute and study the books of Prabhupada, continue to uphold together his movement. as brothers and sisters. Because that's what we were, basically. And even our second generation disciples of the disciples, we were just a few years younger. We were not sons and daughters of those Prabhupada disciples. It became artificially blown up into an organization with a lot of positions and titles and this and that. That weren't real, weren't called for. When Prabhupada, after Prabhupada left, Swarup Damodar, Swami, who was the only devotee in the GBC who was actually from a, born in a Vaishnava family in Manipur, objected strongly, saying, no, we should not, you know, you should not just have some disciples stepping up here, becoming acharyas and taking over as if they were Prabhupada, incarnations of Prabhupada. We should be crying for 5 years. In other words, we should wait. Just stay as it is now. Honor Prabhupada and allow ourselves ample of time to find our ways to grow from here. To work together. But ironically, ISKCON took much the same path as Gaudiya Math did when Bhaktisiddhanta left the world. Fighting about who will be the next Acharya. Only that there were 11 of them. So anyway, if the guru, if ISKCON had continued as some, then actually fought for or argued for, with a more low profile understanding of that there can indeed be Madhyamadikari gurus. Now, if someone who is a Madhyamadikari is a guru, it means that person is not spotless and perfect and completely untouched by the influence of Maya. Only Uttamadikari is that. So, Is it then possible to have a guru? As a disciple, have a guru who can make mistakes? To admit that your own guru can make mistakes and be fallible? Doesn't that mean relativizing the guru? Well, it used to be that we thought that was impossible. And that then it defeats the entire system of guru. But I think that this is something we should look into in the next episode of this.